Is this on? Nope. Well, good morning, church. Glad to see everybody here today. It's nice to see the pews all full with a beautiful sunshiny day out there. There's other options, but we like to see here worship our God. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm Eric Witt. Again, I have the privilege to serve you as the chairman of the Elders Board here at Fort Saskatchewan Alliance. So our long wait is over. We're in candidating weekend. It's been an excellent weekend so far. Pastor Ken has been here and his wife Janelle since Thursday night. So we had some time with them, with Pastor Ken and the staff on Friday. Had a couple sessions with the lay leaders and the small group leaders yesterday in the morning. That went really well. Wrapped it up with a staff and elders board barbecue with Ken and his family. His parents are also here today. They'll be at second service, Wayne and Kathy. So we got to meet them as well. So just a wonderful family. We like what we're seeing. So we do have some time set aside after the service for some snacks and some refreshments. So there'll be a chance to meet and mingle with Ken, Janelle, and their boys. The boys will be at the second service as well, Logan and Parker. And yeah, so just take a moment after the service and meet and greet if you have a chance, and ask them any questions that you may have, and they'll be happy to answer those. So the Lord has prepared us for this day, and we're so excited for it. I know I am personally super excited for it. There's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears going into this last 20-plus months, so I'm happy to see that we're nearing the finish line, so we're excited for that. So without further ado, I'll bring Pastor Ken up here, and he will share his message with you.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, no
problem. So yeah, like, I'm totally nervous this morning. More so than normal. And one of the things that you would get used to me is I'm kind of a guy that just tells you exactly what's going on in my heart and in my mind. And so I'm not going to lie. Not only am I nervous, this is really weird, okay? I have been preaching for almost 20 years, and I have never done this. Preached for a job. It's weird. So I was processing this with Jesus, and one of my favorite places to process is on my tractor mowing my lawn, because you can't get distracted, right? It's just you and Jesus out in creation. I love that, all right? So I'm sitting there on my tractor, and I have a lot of grass right now. I'm going to have way less when I get here, okay? It's a full day job, all right? I'm mowing my grass, and I'm processing. I'm talking with Jesus. And him and I start laughing because I get this mental picture. Now, I don't know if you do reality TV, but Janelle and I, if there's like a contestant or something that catches our attention, we'll tune in for the season. And so one of the shows that sometimes we do that with is The Voice. Anyone ever watch The Voice? Good. So you guys know what I'm talking about. Okay. So I get this mental picture that I'm on The Voice as I'm on my tractor talking with Jesus. But instead of having to sing for my life, I've got to preach for my life, right? And I'm just hoping that Blake will give me one of these, right? Like, and so I had this image, like, of Jesus in the big red chair, like. And I was like, ah. So me and Jesus were sitting there laughing. And in that moment, it was like some peace came over me. Like, it's going to be all right. I'm on Jesus' team. I mentioned this yesterday. Even when I was doing my first search committee interview, I was nervous, praying. Which, you know, one of the things that hit me in that moment was, we're on the same team. And at that point, I think that meant something different than it means today. But regardless, we're on the same team. We have the same King, and we serve Him and Him alone. And so this morning, I want to come to you with the message that is really the anchor, the anchoring message, the anchoring passage in my life, all right? And it comes from Matthew 16, and I'm going to get us there in a moment. And so I want to talk about some things in life that are worth fighting for. And so I got one to start. It's an obvious one, and it's going to set us up for later on, okay? Some things in life are worth fighting for, one of which is love. True love. All right, so let's time out this, okay? My brothers, you're going to have to learn to interact with me because I just set you guys up. And you totally, like, dropped the ball. All right? Les, are you in here? Brother Les? Brother Les, where are you? Brother Les, man. You told me that you got Pentecostal roots. All right? So I need you to help me teach my other brothers to utilize moments in life where they have a chance, all right? So let's pretend what I just said didn't happen, okay? Let's rewind. All right, here we go. So I'm here this morning. I'm going to talk to you about how some things in life are worth fighting for. Let's start with the real obvious one, love. True love. There you go, brothers. You'll learn. So here's the thing. I had to fight for my beautiful bride. She turned me down more times than I can count. I'm not exaggerating. This is a true story, all right? She turned me down again and again and again. So we're meeting with the elders in one of the previous, you know, shindigs in this whole process. And they asked Janelle, so what was it that helped Ken win you over? And she said to them, notes. He wrote me a lot of notes. Now I got a confession. This is great because this is like a fresh start in this season of life for us, right? And so, like, I got to admit to you, I've kind of dropped the ball in the note writing department, all right? So, like, this is a chance. You guys get to hold me accountable in the future in my note writing, capacity. And so I came this morning with a note for Janelle because it is also her birthday today. Mm-hmm. All right? So I actually got a first service and a second service note, but this is my first service note, all right? Now, I have two little boys. We're into Marvel and all things like superhero and that sort of stuff. And we found this card 4 months ago. That's how long I've been saving this card. Now, my wife saves cards for years. 4 months, though, is a long time to hide a card in your truck, all right? So, see, he's got it. Who was that? That was good. Brother Bruce, thank you, man. That Mennonite in you, man. We breaking it. That's good. So we got the Captain Marvel card here. Comes with the bracelet and everything. Parker was pumped about that, I'm sure you can imagine. And me and the boys wrote you a little poem, babe. I'm going to read it for you in front of everybody. We kind of scratched one part out because we came up with a better word after. So anyways, it goes like this. Roses are red. Violets would never be enough. Because without you in our life, who would find all our misplaced stuff? You're welcome. So I also brought her a gift because love's worth fighting for. And Coralie was awesome. She's got this donut board ready to go. And we don't mind cake in our family, but we love donuts. And so here's the thing. Like, I was thinking about this. This is good because even if this sermon sucks, you get donuts today. Right? But our favorite donuts, and by our, I mean Janelle too, like, her favorite donuts, if you've not had these donuts, you talked to her, she's got six, all right, are the glazed croissants with the chocolate. You know what I'm talking about, hey, man? See, you just got a sugar rush right there, and haven't had a bite yet. You're like, oh, yeah. These are like Holy Spirit donuts, right? So we brought a contribution. This is your birthday donut cake. Here you go. You might have to give these back so I can say the same thing to the second service. I didn't bring two of those, so. But you can have one now if you like. I mean, it's up to you. Share one with this guy right here. Chris. This man needs one of those donuts, all right? So some things are worth fighting for, and I'm going to show you what I mean on another level from Matthew chapter 16. If you do not have a Bible here, please feel free to use those pew Bibles, and it's on page 822, Matthew chapter 16. And I'm going to read for you verses 13 to 18. This for me no word of lie. This is the anchoring passage in my life. Whenever I come to those one of those moments, and we all have them, where we think, why? Why did I choose to do this? Why did I get into this? This is the passage that I always go to and anchors me to my why. I recognize that there's this call for me to serve Jesus' local church in this capacity. And you need to know, I've heard Pastor Bob speak this. I've already spoken this myself. I am not suggesting that what I do is different than from what you do. All of our work is sacred. I believe that with all of my heart. I just so happen to have these gifts, and I have to use them and steward them. You have your gifts, and you have to use them and steward them, whatever they are, right? So we each have our gifts. We each need to use them and steward them. But this is the passage that reminds me to do so and stay committed to what I know Jesus has put on my heart and the call he's given to my life. So here we are. Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 to 18. It reads like this. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But you, who do you say I am?" Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." This is a huge passage in my life. Jesus, in the course of getting to this specific moment, chooses to take his disciples up to Caesarea Philippi. Now, here's what I mean by that. If you study the Gospels, you learn really quick that Jesus' home base for his ministry is a little village called Capernaum. If you read the Sermon on the Mount and follow after, it's going to come real clear. This seems to be a central key area that Jesus ministered in, that he served from. And so if you were to go from Capernaum to Caesarea Philippi, I got a picture of a map here. I'll show it to you real quick. If you were to travel that, you would be going approximately 60 kilometers. So the blue dot kind of at the bottom right there is the Sea of Galilee. And Capernaum's kind of at the top part. And Jesus chooses to take his disciples approximately 60 kilometers to the northernmost part of Israel. Okay? The northernmost. And the thing about Israel, this is not like smooth walking. This is hilly, even what they would call mountainous terrain, where you're weaving and you're moving and you're climbing and all that kind of thing. So let's paint that picture. That's approximately here to Mundare, give or take a little. He chooses to walk from here to Mundare to ask a question. Why would he do that? Why would he do that? I mean, some people suggest it's possible because he wanted to, further himself from the microscope of ministry. Like, most people figure his base of ministry was Capernaum because Jerusalem was too big of a hotbed. This is even further. Some people feel that's the case. There's probably some truth to that, but I think there's more. I think there's more. See, here's the thing about Caesarea Philippi that helps us understand this passage in its full context and its greater just kind of depth, if you will. So I got another picture. This one is me teaching at Caesarea Philippi. So this is me teaching a group of about 40 people literally at Caesarea Philippi, and we are standing somewhere near the location that Jesus chose to walk his disciples, hike his disciples up to Caesarea Philippi. Now, there's some crazy things you need to know about Caesarea Philippi. It is the center for pagan demonic worship of the goat god Pan. And this is a multi-generational service, so I can't even describe to you in the service how they would worship because it's that disgusting. He goes to what is most likely the most disgusting, filthy, idolatrous place of worship in all of Israel, to ask, "Who do you say I am?" That's important for us. In fact, some of the things that are kind of unique about this, if you see that big cave, we're going to come back to that later on. But there's little kind of like man-carved out areas. There's one more picture. Let's go to the next one, actually. You can see there's man-carved out pictures all or little caverns or nooks all around there where they would actually put idols to worship with these disgusting acts, okay? So this is a center of demonic pagan worship, and Jesus hikes his disciples way up here and then says to them, "Who do you say I am?" And we get into this moment that is so critical for me, that I believe is so critical for you, that I believe is critical for the entire local church. It goes like this from that point on now. He said to them, "But who do you say I am?" And Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah." Bar is an Aramaic term for son. Blessed are you, son of Jonah, son of John. I don't have time to explain all that right now, and that's fine. But blessed are you, Peter, son of a human being. Catch the parallel. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are Peter, the son of a human being. It's a significant parallel that happens right there. And then he goes on. And he says, "For flesh and blood has not revealed to this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." Now, I love Simon Peter. He gets a bad rap. I really feel that. People talk about he's the foot in the mouth disciple. You know, sometimes he speaks before he thinks. And sure, there's some truth to that. But you know what? He knew the Father's voice. And I'll take that any day, being a man who knows when the Father is speaking. That's significant. I love Simon Peter. I love that he could hear the Father's voice and was willing and had the courage to speak up when he knew what he was saying. Blessed are you, Peter. The Father in heaven is the one who's revealed this. And then Jesus goes on, "I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." Now, I realize this three-word phrase, "on this rock," is hotly debated amongst Catholics and Protestants, and they argue about, is this, you know, Peter being the rock, or is this the Christ the rock, and all those things. I want to tell you something that's really important. I talked about this actually in one of my interviews, and I think this is really significant. If really godly men and women can argue about three words for hundreds of years, there's a possibility there's truth in what both are saying. I think that's worth considering. We don't have to be right on that one. We got to be right on, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." That's the central piece to this passage. Not if we need to win an argument with Catholic brothers or sisters or agree with Protestant brothers or sisters. No. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And he makes sure we don't miss that, because then he goes on, he says, "And I, on this rock, I will build my church." Pastor Ashley already touched on this. This is so important. Please don't miss this part, okay? I promise you, I'm not the person that's going to build this church. I promise you, your elders are not the men that are going to build this church. I promise you, the denomination are not the leaders that are going to build this church. I promise you, you yourselves with all your time, talents, treasures are not the ones who are going to build this church. Jesus is the one who builds the church. He's the builder. He's the architect. I don't have to wonder if that's the case, because he tells me that's the case. All the rest of us are going to let people down and stumble and fall and make mistakes. But Jesus said with certainty that he would build his church. So you and me, we can take that to the bank and start moving. Start moving. Because Jesus will build his church. Now, this word church, in its original language, it's the word ekklesia, okay? It's the first time this is used in our New Testament. And when you study the word church or ekklesia, you learn something that's really important. That the church is the gathering of God's called out ones. Church is not a building. It's not a place. Church is a people. We do not go to church. We are the church. We do not come to church. We gather with the church. You are the church. And so here's Jesus telling his disciples, I am going to build a gathering. You want to know another thing that's really cool about this word? Just popped in my head again. William Tyndale, one of the first English translators, and when he translated this passage, this is how he said it. He said, on this rock I will build my congregation. It's a good translation. Now imagine the disciples sitting there, right? You're going to build a gathering. And there's 12 of us. And here we are today. Here we are today. I'm totally stealing this next thought from Andy Stanley. He says this. He wishes we would get this. I do too. 2,000 years later, we gather. And we're a fulfillment of a prophetic word of Jesus Christ. That he would build his gathering. And far too many times when we gather, we focus on personal preference. We find things that we, you know, disagree on. Rather than recognizing this is a prophetic fulfillment of Jesus' words that he would build his gathering. How cool is that? You and me are a miracle today because Jesus said he would do this, and here we are. There's a lot of talk in our denomination, and I've heard Pastor Bob speak of this as well, about the religious nones and this exodus from the Christian church and how people are moving to this position of just being non-faith, holding no faith. And people are talking about why and considering all the implications of that. I mean, and those debates are great. I'll tell you what I think. I don't think it's that hard. We lost focus that this is a miraculous prophetic gathering of Jesus' church. Jesus said really clearly in the book of John, today I give you a new command. It wasn't enough to just love others as you love yourself. He said, I give you a new one. You are to love one another as I have loved you. And then he washes Judas's feet. Wow. A new command. We are to love one another as Christ has loved us. And as John 17 says, and it's by our love for one another that the world will know that the Father has sent me. We need to be rooted back in that commandment of loving one another. So back to the gathering, the miraculous gathering. Jesus says, I will build my church. And then he goes on and he says, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. This is incredible. The gates of hell will not prevail. Now, I had a prof when I was in college that said to me, if you can't lead someone to Jesus only using the Pentateuch is the first five books of the Bible, okay? So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. If you can't lead someone to Jesus only using the Pentateuch, you don't know the gospel well enough. And I was like, what? You're crazy, man. And I'm sure you can imagine me when I was 20, we got into an argument and I lost. But here's the lesson I learned. I do not have time to unpack this whole story. But one of the hardest things Janelle's and my family has had to walk through is we both come from strong Christian homes with godly parents who love the Lord and taught us these things. But Janelle's sister met a man who was born and raised in Palestine and immigrated to Canada, and over the course of pursuing relationship with him, her sister has converted to Islam. And so when you're the pastor of a family, and you have a brother-in-law that's a Muslim, you're expected to be the one that talks to him. Thing is, we only got one book of the Bible in common, and that's Genesis. And I remembered my prof saying, if you can't lead someone to Jesus only using the Pentateuch, you don't know the gospel, and it became all too true for me. Now, I don't have time to explain how you can do that throughout just Genesis, but I'm going to turn. You don't have to unless you really want to. I'm going to flip really quick to Genesis chapter 22. This is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, and it is totally weird and whatever else, but it makes sense. It's the passage where God asks Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. I'm not going to get into all the details about this, but I'm going to take you to the end of the story, okay? So in verse 15, how this kind of a story ends is this. And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son. That should remind you of John 3:16. Your only son. I will surely bless you. I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. Here we go. Check this out. And your offspring shall possess the gate. What? The gate of his enemy. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. I love that Jesus picks the disciples he picks because they're flunks. All right? They failed out of Jewish rabbinical school. They were not smart enough to be rabbis, so they went back to their father's trade. But in the course of Jewish rabbinical school, you start with the Pentateuch, and they would have no doubt heard this passage where God is proclaiming to Abraham that his seed, his promised one who would come, who would bless all the earth, that should remind us of Jesus, would possess the gates of his enemy. And then back to our passage, okay, he goes and says this, I will build my gathering and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So here's the thing. Jesus knows what's about to go down. He recognizes that some serious things are going to happen, that he is going to be crucified, that he is going to die. And he is saying, not my death, not your death, the disciples, not my Ken Fisher's death, not you, Fort Saskatchewan Lions. No death is going to stop what Jesus is going to do through his church, his gathering that he is going to build. Nothing is going to stop it. He promises this. We can take it to the bank. Nothing will stop it. And not only is this rooted in kind of the Abrahamic father and the promise that was made there, let's go back to the big picture, the blown up picture, Caleb, okay? Not only that, he marches his disciples 60 kilometers through all this terrain. He takes them to the most disgusting place of demonic, pagan, go-God worship. And he says, I'm going to build my church, my gathering, and the gates of hell will not stand against it. And that big cave you see, to the people who worshiped in that area, was literally called the gate of hell. He knew what he was doing. There's no coincidence in this passage, not a single one. This passage is the anchoring passage in my life and my call in ministry, because if Jesus said, I'm going to build my church, I'm in. And when it gets hard, and when it gets tough, and when it gets messy, and I know you all know what I'm talking about when I say that, I still take it to the bank. Jesus is going to build his church, and so I'm in. I'm all in. Everything I got, I'm in, because Jesus said he would do it. And if Jesus says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. Now, here's the thing. I've been traveling around the fort quite a bit. This is my fifth time here in a month and a half. Some of you know that. Some of you don't. It doesn't really matter. And I've been kind of just scouting the land, trying to figure out what the city's all about and what's what and where's where and everything. And I've gone to, you know, different places and met different people and just started up random conversations and all those sorts of things. And in the course of this, I had one of these random conversations. And I went to the Dow Center. And my wife and I were just wandering around like lost puppies, just kind of looking around, seeing. And someone notices that we're around, wandering around. They're like, what is going on with these people? They seem so awkward and weird. Like, what are they doing? And so this young woman, she's in her early 20s, I figure, comes up to us and strikes up a conversation with us and says, hey, what are you guys up to? I'm like, well, we're just checking out the fort. We're interested in potentially moving here. We're just trying to see what's happening. Oh, can I give you a tour? And we're like, yeah, we would love a tour. I mean, this young woman was an awesome, excellent ambassador for this community. But over the course of our conversation, okay, she says, you want to know something really cool about our town? I'm like, yeah, sure. Tell me something real cool about your town. And she goes, so one of the things we do in the summer is we just have random wandering sheep go around. Is this true? You all are weird, man. I'm going to fit right in. I was like, excuse me? She's like, yeah, we just have random wandering sheep going around our town. And I'm like, you're telling me. You're telling me, girl, that you have random lost sheep walking around your town. She's like, yeah, it's our mascot. I hold my wife's hand, I squeeze it, I drag her to my truck, and I say, honey, did you hear that? This city's mascot is lost sheep. We are moving there. Are you kidding me? The physical representation of the mascot, well, whether this is true or not, fully true, it's this young woman's perceived truth is that a wandering lost sheep is your mascot, and we got some work to do. Because Jesus said he will build his gathering, and the gates of hell will not stand against it. That means you and me, we are called to be a battering ram. We are not called to gather in a safe, holy huddle where we feel protected from the world. We are to be a battering ram that marches into the most pagan, disgusting places of worship and proclaim that Christ, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. This here is a fort that's worth fighting for. It is. This is a fort worth fighting for. And you and me, we're called to fight with love. It's a fort worth fighting for. And we fight with love. And I can't wait to get here and fight with you.